And welcome back to Cityscape. I'm Don Marsh, sitting in for Steve Potter. For centuries, puppets and marionettes have been enchanting kids of all ages all over the world. For just over half a century, that job has gone locally to Bob Cramer's Marionettes. I had a chance to talk yesterday with Bob Cramer and with Doug Felch, president and director of Bob Cramer's Marionettes. My first question to Bob was to ask what, if any, difference there is between marionettes and puppets.
Well, the general term is puppets. And under that, you have marionettes, the ones with strings. You have hand puppets, which you work with your hands. And then we have rod puppets and then shadow puppets. But puppets is a general term.
And are they as popular today as they were? Are shows as popular today as they were?
In some ways, they are. In some ways, they aren't. Live performances are kind of more little scarce to find. But the term puppeteer is being used a lot these days. And someone who works something by a remote control or on a rod or a string in a film is called a puppeteer now. So I kind of cringe at that. But a puppeteer is kind of like born. You can go to school and learn all the techniques and all the different things that you need to do to be a puppeteer. But I started when I was 3 years old and made my first marionette when I was 5. It's just something I had to do. And we have a couple of the younger children now that came when they were 3, and now they're going to be 6. And they're staying with the puppets. And that my parents kept saying, well, next year he'll outgrow it. And he'll grow out next year. And it kept going on and on. And so I started doing shows in grade school and high school, and I just kept on doing it. And it just, things kind of fell into place. It was no master plan to it all. Just everything has happened that way, unfortunately. But I just made my mistakes, and ever since, you make beautiful puppets, and I keep saying, well, I made my ugly ones when I was 5, so, you know, what a child's going to do when he can make a puppet when he was little. But I kept working with the clay. Every summer when I was off from school, I made puppets, and that's all I did. I stayed inside and just kept working with the clay and different things. So,
how difficult is it to actually be a puppeteer and actually manipulate puppets?
Well, there's puppeteer includes all the different, puppeteering and all that includes all the different art forms. But what we do includes more than just being the puppeteer. We have a theater, so you have to worry about make sure the lights are working, the sound is working, making sure all the different characters are ready to go on the stage, they're not tangled up. Everything's in the right order. All the puppeteers are there. Sometimes they can't make it, so then you have to kind of fill in and you go nuts behind the stage, but the audience doesn't see all that stuff. But it's difficult because puppetry takes in all the art forms. Everything you can think of is included in being a puppeteer. You have your drawing, and then working with clay sculpturing, and then also sculpturing, working with the wood and that sort of thing. And then there's the mold making, which is some people just make molds, but we do all the mold making ourselves. And then there's costuming and then stringing. And the controls are another thing because you have to figure out how they're going to walk and how they're going to be balanced, that sort of thing. And it's just something you have to learn that by just doing it. One thing when I was little, I wanted to go to work with Bill Baird. I just saw Bill Baird. He was on. He did the puppets for The Sound of Music, when people don't know Bill Baird. And I wanted to work with him. I thought I'd never get to New York, and I eventually did. And I wound up working with him for a year. But by the time I was there, I was in my 30s. And so the way he worked and the way I worked were so similar that we worked together as opposed to him teaching me. I learned a lot of things, but still we really just picked up where each one left off, basically. And it was fun. It was towards the end. I think their theater was open 2 more years after I left there. But meeting different people, it was just exciting to be there. And people now wish they had been able to work with Bill, but he's considered like the last master puppeteer of the United States. There's a family tree of puppeteers, and it goes on and on. He helped develop the Macy's hot air balloons, which is...
Bill Baird is a very well-known name. There's no question about it. Doug, let me turn to you. You taught me something before we went on the air that I'll have you share with the audience, because I think a lot of people might make the same mistake. And that is, we're talking about puppets. I referred to them as a dolly, and you said, don't say that, and don't say they're cute. But they are cute.
Well, I guess Bob clarified it to cutesy. In some ways, one thinks it feels it diminishes the work. We think dolls are wonderful and beautiful, but, you know, ventriloquists do not consider their figure a puppet. And we're like, it's not a puppet. Okay. And that we don't understand. And a basic definition of a puppet is any inanimate object that appears to come to life. That opens the door real, real wide on that subject, needless to say. So, and a doll, we just had an exhibit at the Sheldon for 3 months, which was a great success. And exhibits are great, but it's like having Don Marsh not speaking. What you do is speak and communicate, not just sit there. And what does a puppet do? It doesn't just sit there. It communicates through action and visually. And seeing them static, sometimes they may frighten children. But there was a wonderful comment a puppeteer wrote in after seeing pictures of the exhibit. And, I forgot which Pizzarelli, the musician, was there. And he did a strange pose. And someone, a puppeteer, commented, "Isn't it funny that the puppets are more animated than the human?"
You know, you mentioned that that some children sometimes are scared by these things. I've heard people say they give me the creeps. How do you deal with that? And I'm sure you have to.
Oh, I'll try to make two quick stories. One, now I can't think of his name. It was a TV reporter.
We
won't mention his name. And then he went to Kansas City and then I think came back. But he came to visit our studio. And everything was going well. He kind of mentioned that he was a little skittish about puppets in general. And then we have our orchestra leader, Arthur Fiddler. And he said, would you just have him come up over the stage? And not thinking, why do you want this? He said, well, just for some B-roll. Okay, fine. So we had the puppet come up behind him. Well, in the piece, he said, come to Kramer Marionettes because you never know what's going to happen. And sometimes, I mean, it was all very dark and negative what he was saying about the puppet to make it like, and we're like, why did you have to go like to the dark side? And the other quick story is a gal came with her boyfriend and son, and the little boy was just petrified. And so we talked to him for about 30 minutes. His father, they were separated, had taken him to see a Chucky film at 5 years old. Well, talk about, I was traumatized by that movie. But, and so we try to work it out to let the children know that our puppets are friendly, kind, and loving, and they would never hurt you. And, of course, that they can make puppets themselves and so on and so forth.
But it's, sometimes when the children come in, they're afraid of the puppets, and like 2 or 3 year olds, and sometimes the older ones too. But they can sit in the back of the theater. But by the time the show starts, because we have about an hour demonstration before all of our shows showing how we make the puppets, by the time the show is ready to start, they're usually sitting in a seat, and then by the end of the show, they don't want to leave. So I don't know. I think they haven't seen that much live entertainment. They don't know what this is all about. And it's like, oh my gosh, it's not on a screen somewhere. So they don't know how to deal with it. We win them over.
We do.
Bob, I'll direct this to you. Is this in any sense a dying art, do you think?
It can be. Like I said, it depends on, it's a very specialized way of making your living. There's other people that do puppets, they're involved with puppets, but they're involved with just certain sections of the puppets, like making molds or wood carving. But we do the whole thing that's involved with it. And so that kind of a person is scarce. Like I said, it's almost someone who's just born to do that, like a violin player, or piano player. They have to do that. And this is something I just had to do. And we're trying to pass on our skills and our knowledge to younger children and adults too, and teachers and that sort of thing, so that they can learn how to do this. But everybody says, boy, there's a lot of work involved. And there is. It's hours and hours of work in each one of our characters because they have to last for a long time.
I understand it takes up to 1,500 hours to construct.
Yeah, well, it takes 300 to 400 hours just to get a basic body together to be painted, and then we have to do costuming, and then there's stringing, and it's like, you know, all that.
And then rehearsing.
So it's more than just what the audience sees, but once the character's done, then it's there, and we have characters that people want to come back and see, and they're there.
You know, I wanted to talk a little bit, talking about your shows. You have your own theater, right?
Yeah, we've had it for 36 years now,
What's the capacity of the theater?
We can handle about 150. Usually it's around 100, but We do for a lot less than that these days.
Well, we used to have so much school participation, but the buses have become so expensive. They can afford to come to our theater. They can't afford the bus to get to the theater. And a quick thing about a dying art form. The national organization has 2,000 members national. Out of that, there are foreign members in that organization, and then people who just like puppetry. Then there's teachers who may use puppetry or storytellers who may have a puppet. So it's quite a limited number of people involved.
You know, I would think today with the digital technology out there, video games and all the rest of it, that would be perhaps your biggest competition. I mean, the kids can do everything on a telephone these days anymore.
It's like, who's your competition? Well, it's not another puppet company. It's the baseball, the football, and all the other things like that.
Well, and the art institutions, too, and they have so much money to spend on publicity. Mm-hmm. And the botanical gardens, we're there today. And there'll be a 1:30 show. We'd love to have you come out and see us. Live is different. And the parents see the children's reaction is like, totally different to anything else that they take them to.
But right now we have he's more than an apprentice. Ryan Marshall's working with us, and he's actually right now painting scenery at the Muni Opera. He does that sort of thing. But he also works with us, and he's a very exciting, thinks of different ideas, and he's a puppeteer as well. And then we have the other end. Asher's going to be 6. And he came into the studio when he was 3, and he really wants to be at the studio. We can't have him work at the studio, but he really wants to be there. So every chance they come see a show.
But let me, I have to tell the story. His mother, to cut to the chase, Asher at dinner one night at his home is sitting there and said, "Mom, Dad, you have to get me an apartment near Bob and Doug so I can make plaster molds for them." And they said his 10-year-old sister, who was sparkling and vivacious and into everything, and Asher is now blossoming because he has his thing. And for his birthday, he put on a puppet show. And he's just wonderful. But we feel he may become a puppeteer.
The next generation, and getting ready for our discussion here, I was just trying to visualize in my mind the production of Toyland, which I've been reading about, which I think has almost 150 marionettes, a dozen puppeteers. I can't imagine how complex that would have to be.
Well, it can be if you think of it, if you just look at it as what it was, but you have to take it in sections like everything else. And you do the first act, the second act, and you just don't do the whole show at one time, build all the characters at one time. And it's like doing the script and that sort of thing. And it's just, if you think of it that way, it's not that hard. It took us 4 years to build the show. But
Well, yeah, and the choreography, what happens backstage, as you kind of alluded to, and what happens on the scaffolding sometimes is more elaborate than what's going on the stage because of...
Can the puppeteers manipulate only 2 at a time? Is that basically it?
Well,
if they have to. Usually it's one per puppeteer.
It's one-on-one is best. But when you were a child, Don Marsh, you might have come to see Pinocchio at the Old American Theater. And Ed Steinhauer was the manager there. He was such a great guy. But it was the Pinocchio show. And our dear friend
Joe Pollock, yeah.
After the 6th visit to St. Louis with this show, Pinocchio, he said, "It's a wonderful show. I'm not going to review it again, but do go see it. It is wonderful." What brings that up is that was the first show I was ever with. It toured all over the United States and Canada. And I worked 3 individual jack-in-the-boxes at one time. But the controls were designed so you could work 2 on one hand, 1 on the other, and switch back and forth. But
and then we had the toy soldiers.
22 toy soldiers on stage at one time. They came in 4 on a control, and they were 4 feet tall. We're 25 feet up in the air. And I did the first group that came on. And then the second, marched over, picked up 4 more, went to the other side, picked up 4 more, then the other side, picked up 4 more. And then they did this routine, and then they all bowed. It was the end. And then Bob says, "Let's do it one more time." And I said, "Oh." And the guy who brought the last group on says, "I'm fine. We can do it again." I'm like, "Yeah, you're fine. You just walked on. I've been up there for..."
Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot.
One other area I wanted to touch upon is the work you do with symphonies, including the St. Louis Symphony. Bob, give me some sense of how all that works.
Well, it's interesting. Every symphony, every show we do with a symphony is different. Even with the St. Louis Symphony, they have a way of varying the rhythm or the speed
tempo
of the
whatever.
Tempo. And so we have to rehearse so much with the music that we have to know it inside and out and where it's beginning and ending. With the one piece I can think of was this, the Beauty and the Beast. And sometimes it ended plump, and sometimes it went on for another minute and a half. And a minute and a half is a long time when you're performing. And I said, hold it back. It's not going to end now. Slowly, slowly. And we find, and the Skater's Waltz, they played about twice as slow as you normal one time, and not the St. Louis, but another one. And we, Detroit Symphony, too, was different. Each show, because it's live, and so we're used to recordings, and every time they do it, it varies a little bit. But you have to really know your music then, because if you don't, you're going to be all messed up. But usually the people that play in the symphony love the puppets, and they like to see something different.
Well, the first time we performed with the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra, we were let know, and this was years ago, that the musicians do not like things added to the show. A soloist, okay. But anything else, they're very, very leery of it. We did the first rehearsal, and it was very quiet left at the end. And one of the older members of the symphony, violin player, got up and walked towards us. I'm like, okay. Extended his hand. He said, it was an honor to share the stage with you. And all the musicians stood up and tapping their instrument. It was just like, oh, wow, that was really, really wonderful. And many great memories. And then a quick story. The Alton Symphony was very fine, but we do Dance of the Camaristi with six peasant children who does this tarantella. And the musical cue for the first couple to come on is a tambourine. Well, they didn't tell us that they didn't have the tambourine. And we're like, where's the tambourine? So we were a moment late on starting, but it's like when you're waiting for your musical cue and it doesn't come, it's going to be very, very distressing.
It certainly can. We have to end it there, unfortunately. Okay. Let's remind folks again, 1:30 this afternoon at the Missouri Botanical Garden. Is that correct?
Exactly right. Yes.
And we'll put scheduling material on our website at stlpublicradio.org.
Mm-hmm. And a quick reminder, too, it's a great day. It's Henry Shaw's birthday, so everything is free. A free admission, and so come on down and see the Kramer Marionettes and our salute to the 1904 World's Fair.
Well, we want to thank you both for that, okay. And we always like something that's free. So thank you, Bob Kramer, so much for
being with
us, and Doug Felch, thank you for being with us. Have a great afternoon, and we'll be back in just a moment with Cynthia Kagan-Frolickstein, and we'll be talking about getting started as an author in her 80s. This is Cityscape on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.